future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Welcome in, everybody, to the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Glad to be with you after we were off last week. And spoiler alert, we're going to be off next week because I'm going to see Marvel's Thunderbolts with the wife. So, yeah, we're not going to have a show this week. I've already told Johnny. Cam, I don't think Cam knew. Oh, by the way, Cam Smith is here.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
Johnny Belmer behind the glass, hitting the drops, playing the music. Good to be with you, gentlemen. So you're finding out right in this moment that we're not having a show next week, Cam?
No, Joe told me earlier.
Maybe he didn't tell you why.
He did not. That's why I have to run John Clay next week.
Well, that's because Belmer's out. That has nothing to do with me.
Yeah, I'll be at a wedding in Austin.
Great.
But look, when you're a married man in his 40s with a kid, like, your opportunity to go see movies on the weekend, not all that great. So I'm taking one because, damn it, I heard Thunderbolts is good and Marvel hasn't had many hits lately. So I'm gonna jump on the chance to see it. We'll get into the Texans here in just a minute. But first, I want to give a quick personal shout out to all the psychopaths, including my father, who will turn 70 later this year, who are riding in the MS-150, the bike race that takes off in Houston and goes to, well, it used to go to Austin, now it goes to LaGrange. 150 miles, as the name would indicate, helped him get started and dropped him off there. Man will turn 70 in August, and he's riding 150 miles on his bicycle today and tomorrow.
Is that's over a two-day period?
2 days.
That's still
now,
pretty impressive.
When he was younger, he did the whole thing in 1 day, 18 hours.
Hi.
Like
no,
I said,
no stopping.
You
gotta stop at some point.
Well, I mean, to use the restroom. But like, pretty much that's it. Yeah,
that's my
father's a psychopath.
That's very impressive.
I love the man. He has helped me out of many jams. Obviously, far athletically superior to me. The man rode to Austin and back in a single day, 18 hours. Anyone riding in that, hats off. Tip the cap to you, because that is an unbelievable feat that I don't know how those people do, raising a lot of money for MS also along the way. So anyway, we will get into the Texans right now. Later, the Rockets and the Astros, of course, Mount Rushmore plus one coming up at 1:30. If you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. Again, Brian, Cam, John here with you. And we're going to get to the Texans draft right now. I think a lot of us were hoping to see something fun, see something exciting on Thursday, but we had to wait a day. The Texans decided to trade out of 25, trading the pick to the New York Giants, who then use it on quarterback Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. Not Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders still on the board as we speak, completely free-falling, and we will get into that later in the show. But before we get into the picks the Texans made yesterday, Cam, what was your overall thought on the Texans trading out from 25. I saw a lot of people upset by the move. What were your overall thoughts on that move in particular?
I wasn't upset that they traded back. I mean, you always expect Caserio to do something that might be a little eye-opening. I think that they could have gotten a little more in return. I feel like some of these teams that traded back got more in value.
Well, certainly the very next pick.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rams traded back with the Falcons and picked up a future first.
Exactly. So I think that they could have gotten more, but it seems like they had a game plan with this entire thing. So I mean, I think the Texans have had a nice little draft so far.
Johnny, did that sound condescending to you?
A little.
I was just talking to you outside about how I like some of their picks.
They had a nice little draft.
Yeah.
Good job there, fella. You did all right. Are you going to punch him on the arm? Hey, champ, good job.
Yeah.
Pal. What are you dropping to the Texans here?
I think that they've had a good draft.
You can't say they had a good little draft, though, come off as not condescending. I'm not mad about it. Especially when
the Texans are the team that eliminated
Shut your face.
The Chargers
you're damn
this
right,
last
you're
season.
Damn right, John Belmer.
I am not being condescending. I literally said the Texans
are your conqueror. Put some respect on their name.
I said that their first pick is somebody that I wanted the Chargers to draft. So I think that they've had a good draft outside. I figured. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's kind of the dynamic of the show.
Just outside of thinking that they could have gotten a little more for trading out of the first round, I think that they've done pretty well.
Yeah, and I agree with you. When they first made the trade and seeing what they got back with the three combined picks in the second round and third round, I thought, okay, yeah, it's a pretty good haul. I don't mind that, because at that point in the draft, you know, I went into it wanting an offensive lineman, specifically an interior offensive lineman, and when Donovan Jackson went pick before them to the Vikings, it's like, okay, there's not really anybody at that position I want right now. So I thought in the moment when the Texans are on their clock, really the only decision at that point once they're on their clock was to trade back, and they got good value. They won that trade. I think I saw the trade value win for them was like the equivalent of a third-round pick. Like the value they got back, they won the trade by the value of a third-round pick. So great job by Caserio. But when you see literally the team with the very next pick after you get a first, I can't help but to have some FOMO with like, man, I could have got a little more.
Exactly. Well, I mean, how many picks did they have going into it? Like five?
In the entire draft?
Yeah. Going into the draft, what was it, like five?
Well, they had a first. They had, I think, second and two-thirds, and then a bunch of picks on the sixth and seventh. So I don't remember. I think it may have been seven or eight picks overall. But
I don't know why I thought they had like five picks. But
well, they did go into last night. They had five picks in the second and third round going into last night, but that was because, in part because of the trade they made moving back from 25. So, if I'm going to fault the Texans here, and we'll see. I'm willing to let this thing play out, see how it goes. And if you have any thoughts, again, 713-780-3776, the call or text on the HRP listener line. But if I'm going to fault the Texans with, okay, going into it, they had to get an interior offensive lineman. In my opinion, they had to get them high. It wasn't once they're on the clock, right? Once they're on the clock, where Donovan Jackson goes a pick ahead of you, I don't really think they had much they didn't really have another option but trade back. The value wasn't there for an interior offensive lineman at that point. If I'm going to give fault to them, it's the process that started in March with free agency and training Tunsil, putting them in a situation where they were so desperate for offensive linemen, putting them in a position where if you do get sniped like you did by the Vikings with taking Donovan Jackson one spot ahead, now you're SOL in a way. Like, there were so many names we talked about, like the start of free agency. The one that stands out most, you know, at the top of my list was Kevin Zeitler from the Lions, who got like a 1 year, $9 million deal. Like, if the Texans had made that move, I mean, I would still want an offensive lineman somewhere in the process, but it wouldn't have had to been first round. I'd been more excited about a trade back because I wouldn't have felt like they're in such a desperate need, but instead they passed on that. Instead, they traded Laremy Tunsil, and the savings they got for Laremy Tunsil, they went to overpaying Jalen Petrie. Like, my fault in their process wasn't once they traded back when they're on the clock on Thursday. It was all the stuff that came before that, the free agents they didn't sign, trading your best offensive lineman, and then using that windfall not on improving the offensive line but overpaying a nickel corner. That's, to me, where I give more fault to the Texans.
Yeah, and, I mean, obviously the Tunsil trade surprised a lot of people. And, you know, kind of what you're saying, like, I could have been on board with it if maybe they weren't going to be the 25th overall pick, if they were going to be a worse team in pick and, you know, the high teens, low.
To where they would have been in a position to draft, like, a Kelvin Banks or whoever.
Yeah, or if they, which, I mean, a lot of reports said that they were interested in moving up, and maybe they tried to, and it just didn't work. But if this is kind of, I don't want to say the worst case scenario, but I think it's what people kind of feared, where they're getting rid of their best offensive lineman and then they didn't address it in the first round.
Yeah. And so, I think that's the fear. Like, they've got some offensive linemen that I like. I believe in Blake Fisher. I think, I mean, Cam Robinson has had some success in the past. There's some pieces there. Jarrett Patterson, especially for where he was drafted, I think is a valuable asset. I just don't know if 2025, like, they made a move shipping out Laremy Tunsil that immediately impacts 2025, coming off a season where they didn't protect him well, gave up a higher pressure rate on C.J. Stroud than Patrick Mahomes faced in the Super Bowl. And we saw how that pressure cracked the Chiefs' offense. So they made a move that directly impacts 2025 in a negative way, shipping out Laremy Tunsil. And to this point, they haven't counteracted that negative move, right? They traded for Lincoln Thomas, or they traded for Ed Ingram, decided Lincoln Thomas, and two guys whose one-on-one pressure rate given up was worse than Kenyon Green. So problem not solved with those guys. Wow. And then they draft a guy with Ursary in the second round who – and we're going to hear some audio from Todd McShay here in maybe the next segment, that there's a lot of people that like him, but everyone seems to say, like, well, he's – needs a little work, right? He might not be ready this year, and he's probably a right tackle where you already have, what, four other guys?
Yeah.
I mean, you already have Cam Robinson. You already have Trent Brown. You already have Titus Howard. You already have Blake Fisher. Now you're adding Ursary to it. Like, you have five tackles. I mean, obviously, it would seem like Titus Howard will move inside the guard.
He has to.
But, like, the things you've done haven't really improved the problem that you had on the interior offensive line.
At least for this upcoming season.
But that's a big concern. Yeah. Like, I mean, the Texans, and I mean, you look at the rest of the team, like, they look like there could be a team that could compete for the most part. I like what they did at wide receiver in the draft. They've obviously got a great defense. I believe in Joe Mixon. I believe in the quarterback, C.J. Stroud. But for 2025, for a team that has division title and beyond hopes, like, they didn't really improve or address their biggest need.
Yeah, and I think another issue, too, is obviously Cam Robinson was like a one-year signing, so he's like a gap filler. But the problem is if what we're hearing from Irsay is he's somewhat of a project, if you're not going to get anything out of Cam Robinson, and Irsay is supposed to be a project, then you're arguably in even more trouble.
I mean, Cam Robinson's going to start.
Oh, he's going to start, but you don't know. I mean,
you don't know what level. Okay, you're saying what level of play he'll be at. Okay, I see what you're saying.
I feel like, you know, they signed Cameron Robinson to fill in this year. They draft Irsay so that hopefully in 2 years he's ready. But if Robinson is not good at all this year, are you just going to force Irsay, who's supposed to be a project, in at left tackle? And it's just kind of like, ugh.
Well, they would probably force in Blake Fisher first before Ursary. But then again, that was the guy that drafted in the second round last year, and he was a swing tackle for him last year. Now, he got pushed into duty because of injury at times, but he's not – you can't go into 2025 and say, I know Blake Fisher is starting quality 100%. Like, you can't say that. We don't know that yet, and that's kind of the problem. Like, all of these things you have, other than I feel pretty good about Titus Howard at left guard. I think Jarrett Patterson is at least a average NFL center, and I think Cam Robinson could be an average left tackle, I think. But you look at everything else, Lakin Tomlinson, terrible last year. Ed Ingram, terrible last year. Ursary, your second-round pick this year, complete unknown.
Yeah.
Blake Fisher, your second-round pick last year, I would say he's beyond being a project, but you don't really know what you're going to get from him this year. There's just way too many question marks. Like, all the question marks we had are all pretty much the ones we had in February are also kind of there, and that's kind of the problem. But let's move off of that, and when we come back on the other side of the break, let's get into the picks the Texans did make yesterday once they decided to go ahead and make a few in the second and third round. That, when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 with you here on a glorious Houston afternoon. On day three of the NFL draft, we just saw Baron Sorrell from the University of Texas hook him, get drafted by the Packers. The second Longhorn, I believe, drafted by the Packers. They also drafted Matthew Golden. I'm not sure if there was another Longhorn in between, but something of local note there with Baron Sorrell going off the board. But let's get into the most important thing for the locals here. That's what the Houston Texans did. Didn't make a draft pick on round one, but got it off or got off to a hot start in day two with the second pick in the second round, drafting Jaden Higgins, the wide receiver out of Iowa State. Big year last year for the Cyclones. 87 catches for 1,183 yards, 9 touchdowns. And Cam, one of the things you and I were talking about before the show started was just how freakish it is for how closely he seems to fit to Nico Collins as far as like size and height and weight. Jaden Higgins, 6'4", 214. Nico, 6'4", 215. And then they ran, Jaden ran a 4.47 40, and Nico Collins ran a 4.45 40. So it almost feels like they copied and pasted Nico Collins into the body of Jaden Higgins. And before we share our own thoughts on the pick, right now let's hear from former ESPN draft scout, now doing it on his own, but Todd McShay, his thoughts on Jaden Higgins. Seems like he loves him.
I mean, they took my two favorite receivers, my absolute favorite. The teammates from Iowa State.
Teammates.
Reunited. Feels so good. Jaden Higgins, wide receiver, 6'4", and juice. Ran in the 4.4s. We talked about him earlier today, folks. Great release package off the line of scrimmage. Runs, can run past you at that size, the 33-plus inch arm length. Contested catches, 20 of them this last year. Led the Big 12.
I'm excited about Jaden Higgins. I know you said, as a Chargers fan, you were hoping he was going to slip to your boys.
I did.
I don't remember how many picks later the Chargers pick was after that spot. But, yeah, I'm very pleased. I'll still say, you know, offensive line was my top need. So, I guess in a perfect world, I would like to see that first pick be an offensive lineman, but whatever. I do really love the Jaden Higgins pick, not only because he played in a major conference where he was productive, so checks those two boxes. I don't usually like, you know, super small school guys or guys that you're more having to project because they didn't produce in college. He checks both of those boxes. The size, the height, the weight, being basically a copy and paste from Nico is exciting, especially since, like, I like the addition of Christian Kirk, but to me his best role on the team is a slot receiver. And going into the draft, you know, you're probably going to have to first – force Kirk into being an outside receiver. But now with Jaden Higgins, who, again, 6'4", 215, same size as Nico Collins, he can play on the outside, and that allows Christian Kirk to play in your slot. And I feel a whole lot better about the top, like the guys that should be on the field the majority of the time. Obviously, their receiver depth goes beyond three. But, you know, for the most part, your top three receivers are going to be the guys that get the majority of the snaps. I'm feeling pretty good about that receiving core, which was a big question mark when we went into the offseason.
We talked about it. I love that pick. That's somebody that I was hoping the Chargers might be able to land, but he went to the Texans, and I'm excited for them for that. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he was like top five in lowest drop percentage in college football.
I had that tweet favorited. Let me scroll. Okay, yeah, so drop rates of the top 10 wide receivers on, this was from the 33rd team, drop rates of the top 10 wide receivers on their 2025 big board, Jaden Higgins, lowest in the draft class at 1.4%. He only dropped 4 of 295 targets since 2022.
Yeah, that's crazy. So not only is he big body, has decent speed, but he basically catches everything thrown to him, just like Nico.
Just like Nico Collins. It feels like you got Nico Collins 2.0, which,
yeah.
I mean, that's a high bar to put on the kid. He hasn't played an NFL snap yet, but all the measurables, the production, the drop rate, like all that seems to line up with I guess for now we'll have to call him poor man Nico Collins because he hasn't done it in the league yet, but you might have gotten Nico Collins all over again.
I mean, that's the most comparable person.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that they're on the same team.
Well, I mean, clearly Nick Caserio has the type, right?
Yes, clearly.
It's like, who should we take? How about the guy that looks exactly like the one I picked in the third round, you know, a few years ago, that's turned into a top five wide receiver in the league? So,
And I like it, too, because I know it's – obviously, this is many, many moons ago, but it seemed like – back in the day, even with Andre Johnson, one of the biggest issues with the Texans was they just didn't have big bodies that could bully people in the end zone. I mean, as big as Andre and good as he was,
he was a 6'4".
Yeah.
And I think he was 6'2", 6'1".
And he was, you know, he was 6-7 touchdowns in the season. Now you have 2'6", 4", 215 guys that, I mean, just.
Cam, you're getting me excited.
Yeah.
You got some sports pants in, pants tent over here.
Hey, hey.
Thinking about C.J. Stroud dropping back in the end zone and getting to throw to two guys who are 6'4", just sort of box people out and play basketball in the end zone.
Exactly. Fuck. So, no.
What was that, Johnny?
Sorry?
Fuck.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that's not exactly what I was saying, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah.
I appreciate this. Wow, Johnny going hard on us there. let's skip the offensive lineman for now, and we'll backtrack, Johnny. Let's go now to the clip on Jalen Noel, because, one, it's another wide receiver, and, two, it's from the exact same school. So here is Todd McShay talking about the Texans' third-round pick, Jalen Noel, wide receiver out of Iowa State.
Jalen Noel.
Don't say it like that.
Jalen Noel.
In the middle of the third, huh?
I couldn't believe it. It was a steal of the entire draft. Everyone wants to talk about Shador and the quarterback. But when you get Jalen Noel, and he's going to come in and he's going to break NFL cornerbacks' ankles with his routes and his savvy and his 4.39 speed and his explosion. And, yeah, it's not the biggest catch radius, but I got that on the other side. Now those two complement each other. And by the way, I got Nico Collins. He missed 5 games last year, but he's coming back.
Yeah, no, you're good. Christian Kirk, you traded for,
but Christian Kirk. So now we, like, CJ's got dudes.
Yes.
Big and small. We got two bigs, two smalls.
Two bigs, two smalls, Cam. They got two bigs, two smalls. I really like they went into this offseason with, like, Nico Collins and then, like, the three of us at wide receiver. Basically, that's what they had at wide receiver, and they've added to that with the trade with Christian Kirk, who obviously was hurt last year. He has had some injury problems, but is at least an above average wide receiver 3 at worst. Right? You add to that with Higgins and Jalen Noel out of Iowa State. Eventually in 2026, cross your fingers, cross your toes, cross whatever, you get Tank Dell back. Like, they're in a spot where if they're able to resign Christian Kirk, they've got a seriously deep wide. They have a seriously deep wide receiver room, I think, even this year. But I mean, next year if Tank Dell returns, it won't quite be the excitement people had of Nico Diggs Tank coming into this year before they all got hurt. But it's really looking like an exciting wide receiver room going into this year and beyond.
It might be the deepest wide receiver core that they've.
The top end talent outside of Nico, you know, TBD. We don't know what Higgins and Noel will turn into. I think, like, deepest, because that was a part of the, that was obviously a big question mark going into the early part of the offseason in free agency. Like, they signed Justin Watson, they signed Braxton Berrios, they still had John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson. And you're looking at that room with Tank Dell not coming back. You're like,
and they love those Iowa State receivers.
Like, are they going to have to start Justin Watson in Braxton? Like, it was
not anymore.
It was looking, you know, desperate, and I don't think that's overselling. It was looking desperate, and they now, with the addition of Christian Kirk and then the addition of the two Iowa State wide receivers, they not only have a wide receiver room I'm comfortable with, they have one I'm excited for.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately, when they first brought Kirk in, he was automatically going to be the two because Tank's out and Stephon Diggs is gone, but now, because of how good Higgins is supposed to be, you would assume he's going to be the two, and everybody.
And Kirk's probably the slot.
And everybody loves Noel. So, I mean, heck, Kirk could ultimately slide to the four. And if that's somebody who has averaged around 800, 900 yards a season, if that's what you're getting out of your four, then that's crazy.
Yeah, I guess you could be in a situation where the pick of Jalen Noel is something that allows you to not have to pay Christian Kirk. I mean, playing fantasy football, playing Madden GM, I'd still like to have them all because I want CJ Stroud to have all the wide receivers. Let's get Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson here too while we're at it. But it might be in a situation where if you have some salary cap concerns where you go ahead and let Christian Kirk walk because you have his replacement now with Jalen Noel, and you roll into 2026 with Nico, your two Iowa State wide receivers with Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins, and then the returning Tank Dell, and you're four deep with guys you love.
Yeah.
So that's a great spot to be. Let's quickly go to Their other second round pick, the offensive tackle out of Minnesota, who they traded up for. Interesting tape I saw with him going up against Abdul Carter. Held his own, didn't allow a sack in that game with Abdul Carter rushing him all game long. So props to him, Ursary, there on the job blocking Abdul Carter. But let's hear right now from Todd McShay his thoughts on the Texans' second round pick, Ursary, the offensive tackle out of Minnesota.
In 2029, when we look back, Ariante Ursary will be one of the top three offensive tackles in this class and may be the best or second best offensive tackle from this group. Here's the thing with Ursary, man. On tape, I'm looking at a 6'6", 331-pounder who ran a 5.0140. And I already told you that size with that speed, what it means. Big guys that move like this don't fail. Very rarely. Orlando Browns, Dan Fa'alele, Amarius Mims, Cincinnati, Trent Brown, 6'7", 355, seventh round pick, been in the league 100 years. This guy moves well, and he's a big, big dude, man. He surprised me on tape because he's quick, and he his knee bend. I think he has the potential to develop into an elite pass blocker.
He certainly has the potential.
Massive frame, engulfs defenders in the run game. Quick, surprisingly balanced. This guy's a left tackle in the league, man.
Now, we'll see if he's... Yeah, I thought I clipped that out, but I guess that was from TikTok. But, I don't know if he's a left tackle. Lance Zierlein, for what it's worth, has him... thinks he's more of a right tackle. The write-up on Lance, I'll go through it quickly. Three-year starter, left tackle with good power. Ursary is not a natural bender, which creates disadvantages with leverage and when attempting to mirror moving fronts. Ursary has the potential to become an average starting tackle on the right side, but his success will be tied to matchups across from him. So I think it's a good pick. It's not an exciting pick. I do take what Todd McShay says, though, to heart about guys who profile as like a plus athlete at his size don't fail. But that doesn't mean he's a home run. That doesn't mean he's an all-pro. He's just, well, to Lance's point, that means average NFL starter. Like,
On the right side.
He's not Laremy Tunsil's replacement. I think this is a situation where maybe Blake Fisher moves to left tackle down the road. Like, once Cam Robinson leaves after the season, maybe Blake Fisher moves to left tackle. Maybe Titus Howard, if he's still on the team, because that could always be a cap cut at some point. Maybe he's the left tackle, and Fisher, they will have to figure it out. Maybe Titus Howard just stays at left guard, and Fisher and Ursary are tackles. But I like that they have options. I like his profile, even though it seems like he's a bit of a project for 2025, or at least needs more development before he's ready to start. I still have concerns about 2025, because I don't know if he has a role in the starting lineup at 2025, but I think I like the pick overall.
See, I read this as he's looked at as going to be a really good left tackle, but if he has to move to right tackle, he'll give you average play.
Todd McShay seems to think that Lance does not. And look, this is all guesswork here. I mean, those two guys watch, obviously, infinitely more film than you and I do, so I'll trust their opinion. Problem is, their opinions are different. So,
indeed.
Yeah, like, one of them has to be wrong here. But, I mean, regardless, if you get a starter at left tackle or right tackle, I think you hit a home run.
Yeah.
The question is, how good of a starter can he be? And then, if he's right tackle, who's your left? Does Blake Fisher develop? Does Titus Howard move back out? Or is he still on the roster because Cam Robinson's gone? So, there's some questions there for Nick Caserio to answer still. I think my biggest concern with Ursary is I don't think he helps you in 2025. So if I'm going to kill the Texans on anything, is he doesn't help you now, and the Texans need to win now. They're ready to win now, except for the offensive line. Ursary, I don't think, helps you in 2025, so that's my criticism. But I do think he will eventually be an average to above-average starter for them 2026 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I like that they have a lot of potential good options at the ends and that tackles, but the interior offensive line
is looking rough for 2025.
Still,
like right now, your interior offensive line, it would be left guard Titus Howard, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then your center and right guard in some combination would be Jarrett Patterson and Drew Scruggs, which
it's not the worst.
It's not the worst, but the problem here, and I made this point the other day on the Killer Bees, like, even if you tell me Drew Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson are average NFL starters, cool, but you've got zero depth behind them at those spots. Like, I know you technically have Ed Ingram and Lincoln Tomlinson on the roster, but again, their 101 pass blocking success, like their pressures allowed, were as bad or worse than Kenyon Green,
who we
ran off the roster. So, like, I mean, the offensive line outside of, you know, running back might be the position most prone to injury just because of the wars they go through on an every down basis. Those guys don't leave the field. They don't rotate out like, you know, defensive linemen or defensive backs or linebackers. So you lose one of those guys, and I think you've got a big problem. So that'll be something to watch for this season. I hope that Nick Caserio has some answers there. Or hope maybe the hope is just that he's right on these guys he's added to the roster. But I have some major
that's
concerns.
That's all you can hope for at this point.
Yeah.
So
really, I mean, what is the other option? I
mean, make a trade in the season. Yeah, I don't know.
That's kind of the point. Like, that's not really all that realistic. So. Anyway, right now it would be a lot of crossing our fingers and hoping for the best with that interior of the offensive line. But overall, I do like their first three picks. Quickly before we go to break, Jalen Smith, their fourth pick yesterday, the cornerback out of USC. Now, obviously take these with a grain of salt, but this was pointed out by John Crumpler on Twitter. Quote, Jalen Smith was the 30th ranked cornerback on Dane Brugler's board, valued as a seventh round prospect. Similarly, Lance Zierlein had him valued in the seventh round as well. It kind of feels like the Houston Texans lit a top 100 pick on fire there. Can't lie. Now, Lance did point out afterwards that he and Brugler and others had similar feelings on Kalen Bullock last year. He was a third round pick by the Texans. People thought he was drafted too high, and obviously Kalen Bullock worked out great. So the league was, or the draft evaluators were wrong on Bullock. The league, or Nick Caserio, was not. I hope that's the case again, because Nick Caserio does have a great track record of evaluating defensive backs. I mentioned Bullock, Jalen Petrie. I didn't like the contract extension, but that was as a third round pick, that was a hit. Obviously, Kamari Lassiter, Derek Stingley Jr., massive hits as well. So Nick Caserio knows how to scout defensive backs, but the prognosticators, the draft experts, didn't really love that pick of Jalen Smith, the cornerback out of USC.
I get last year there was a little bit more need in the secondary and cornerback. So, you know, pulling the trigger maybe early on Bullock makes more sense than them. I don't understand this pick. Like, obviously you always want to have depth at D-line and in the secondary, but I don't think that they needed to get a cornerback in the third round. I think you could have definitely waited until the fifth or sixth, because he's just gonna add depth. Like, this is not somebody that you're gonna start or see a lot of.
Yeah, because right now your five starting defensive backs are set.
Yeah.
I mean, Stingley and Lassiter, your outside corners, Jalen Petrie's in the slot, and your safeties are C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Kalen Bullock. So you're right. Like, this corner is coming as depth. I still thought corner's one of those spots to me. I would say the same thing about offensive linemen and pass rushers. You can never have enough.
Nope.
So I don't mind them drafting depth, and I think the depth behind those five guys I mentioned is kind of thin. So I'm with you, though. Like, I understood them addressing at some point third round when you still had questions on the interior offensive line, and I'll also throw in defensive tackle. I think there's a question mark.
And tight end.
And backup running back behind Joe Mixon, because no running back plays 17 games. I thought those were all more needs more worthy of addressing in the third round than the cornerback. Now, obviously, I can't speak to Casario's board, who he had value there. Maybe the guys on the board at the time at those other positions I mentioned just didn't make sense. I'll leave that up to him. I'll trust his evaluation on cornerbacks. But that one was a little bit of a head-scratcher. Of all the picks so far, well, they now made five because they picked a running back also out of USC later or earlier today. That one, I think, was the most head-scratching.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, other side of the break. We're way, way over. My bad there, Johnny. When we come back, we'll finish up our Texans conversation with some scenarios that apparently Nick Caserio passed on, including trading up all the way to 12 with the Cowboys to draft Tyler Booker. And then something that bothers me, I don't know if it should. I'll let Cam or John tell me if this should bother me so much. But Caserio is lying to us, and I don't know why. Down the other side of the break, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building there.
Hello.
broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, talking Texans and draft and all that sort of good stuff. Next hour, we will definitely get into the Rockets and what the Astros have done over the last couple days before we get to Mount Rushmore plus one. But right now, finishing off our Texans conversation, going to the top of the hour. If you want to join in, share your own thoughts on what the Texans did or what they should have done, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Again, 713-780-3776. So Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Bellmer with you here. And one of the more interesting things, Cam, that I saw come out of day one was the idea that apparently Nick Caserio was calling everybody trying to trade up and go get an offensive lineman. And the one that seemed to have the most legs, and we're about to hear audio from a station in Dallas confirming the report, was apparently the Texans were trying to go up as high as spot number 12 with the Cowboys, presumably trying to get offensive lineman Tyler Booker out of Alabama, who I really wanted. That was like my top guy, who I thought at the time could last at 25. He obviously went much earlier at 12. The Cowboys went ahead and took him once the deal fell through. But let's hear right now from a radio station in Dallas talking about the trade that almost happened between the Cowboys and the Texans.
Apparently, and this is coming from those within the building, Houston was the team that was on the clock.
Yeah.
Or that was on the phone.
Yeah.
Houston was the one that wanted to make the trade. Apparently, it was a low ball offer initially. Steven called back, wanted something more. Houston said no. So that's where the kind of breakdown happened from a trade scenario side. And they decided to stick and pick with a guy that they had very high on their board.
So, I mean, trading 25 to 12, like, I appreciate the aggressiveness from Nick Caserio. But, like, looking at the trade value chart, Cam, that would have taken, like, so I went to the trade value chart of Pro Football Reference. The 25th pick, according to their value chart, sorry to bury us in numbers a little bit, but had a value of 720, whereas the 12th pick had a value of 1,200. So a difference of about 500 there. So when you look at the trade value chart, the last pick in the first round this year had a pick of 590. And even if, so the Texans, like, that value to trade up from the difference of 25 to 12 was 520. But teams are never willing to do that for the exact value of that trade. You're going to have to go over value. We've seen that basically every single trade, like the Travis Hunter trade this year, the Will Anderson trade a couple years ago. You're going to have to go over value. So I think at minimum you're talking about, and again, the 32nd pick this year, last pick of the first round, was a value of 590. The difference was 520. I think you're at least talking about a future first if Nick Caserio is able to pull off that trade. I don't know what his final offer was, but having the knowledge of it would have taken a future one, maybe even a little bit more, I'm kind of glad they didn't do it.
Yeah, no, because this isn't a game of what can I do for you. It's what can I do for me. So you know that teams are always going to ask more than, or they're gonna ask for more value than was probably fair in that trade.
And I'm fine with overpaying a little bit, but
me too. But you're talking about, you're literally doubling down. You're going from 25th to 12, and you know it's the Cowboys. So they're not gonna try and
think
do.
Jerry would have taxed us.
Yeah, they're not gonna try and do the. I mean, I'm not gonna say that the Cowboys and Texans are a rival, but you're not gonna do a favor to another team in the same state, especially when Dallas was high on Tyler Booker to begin with. So it's kind of like, oh, the Texans want to take our guy. We're going to ask for a lot more.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I'm curious what the Cowboys wanted versus what Caserio initially offered, because you're right. I mean, the in-state rival thing, I think it could be a factor, but might be oversaid. But I do agree with, like, clearly the Cowboys love Tyler Booker because they took him. So, I mean, whatever the trade value was for moving 25 to 12, it was going to cost, I think, a decent chunk over that because Tyler Booker was your guy. Like, you're, to your point, you're not only trying to find the value to make it worth it moving back to 25, you're basically saying the guy you want, he's now ours. Like, that's going to cost That's going to cost a little bit extra. So,
and clearly the Cowboys over the years know how to draft offensive linemen.
Now that Stephen Jones is more involved, for sure.
Yeah, and if the Cowboys are moving back to 25, we're seeing that all the best offensive linemen were going before that. So they would have been.
Yeah, they're basically signing up to lose out on the position entirely. Well, not entirely, but the high-end talent.
Yeah, and they need offensive line help just as much as the Texans do.
Zach Martin retired, so certainly. So now, why do I want Tyler Booker so much? Well, I mean, one, he's a good player out of Alabama. Obviously, good program, great conference. But this audio you're about to hear from Tyler Booker, I believe this is from the Combine, talking about why he loves playing football. This gave me a little bit of sports pants tint, guys. This is a large part why I wanted Tyler Booker.
There's legal assault out there, and I love football because the brand of football that I play, guys not love football anymore, and I do that every day, every down, by really just giving them my all and letting them know I'm not going to let up. So the thing I love the most about football is taking the love away from other people.
The thing he loves about football the most, guys, is taking away the love of football for his opponent across, beating the hell out of them, being a bully. I really, really wanted Tyler Booker. Look, I mean, sometimes I think mentality or being the, you know, is he Texans worthy, that whole thing, sometimes that's oversaid. But if you're looking up trying to put a picture to the swarm mentality that D'Amico Ryans wants to play with, it's right there. And it's Tyler Booker. That quote we just heard, that's swarm.
And that's a massive man committing legal assault.
Yeah,
6'5", 322.
If they had drafted him, they should have made shirts with that, legal assault.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would have bought one.
You know they would have.
I would have bought one. Absolutely. So, I think they missed out on Tyler Booker, but I don't blame them for not trading up to 12. If they had done it, I guess I could have been talked into it, because the bottom line is help your quarterback, and that helps your quarterback. But, man, a future first, I think, was too much in that scenario. So I don't really blame
them. And that's not all that they would have had to.
No, you're right. Like, it would have been a future first plus maybe, you know, a fourth rounder or something like that. There would have been some sweeteners thrown in. So, especially just 2 years removed for doing the same thing for Will Anderson. Like, Now, I guess to the other side of it, if I could quickly play devil's advocate to my own statement, which is weird. I'm having a conversation with myself in that aspect. But they did just get extra picks back from Washington for Laremy Tunsil. So, I mean, if they'd done it, I think I could have justified it to myself as like, well, this is basically trading Laremy Tunsil for Tyler Booker. If you're giving up those extra picks you got in return for Tunsil and then turning that into Tyler Booker. But
I just think because it was Tyler Booker, it was just...
I just wanted the legal assault guy,
like,
man.
It could have, and you know, I mean, I think... I'm glad that they didn't pull the trigger. I think it would have made more sense to maybe like move up and get like Greg Zabel at like where he went
18. Yeah.
To like,
I don't know
Seattle.
What the value would have been there, but certainly six picks later would have been.
You would have had to give a lot less.
Yeah, I don't think a future first would have been involved. So yeah, that would have been far more tolerable. So maybe a missed opportunity there, but I understand Caserio passing on that. And one more quick note on that: I saw some people like getting kind of upset about that notion that you heard the first clip we played from the guys from Dallas, being upset that Nick Caserio, quote-unquote, lowballed the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know, understand why people are so upset about that. To me, the only way I'd be upset about the, quote-unquote, lowball offer to the Cowboys, if the offer was like, we all have that dude in our fantasy league, right, that sends you like just the terrible offer, and you just decline it, you don't even respond to him. That's the only way I would have been mad at Nick Caserio. If he sent an offer so offensive to the Cowboys that Stephen Jones says, like, man, I'm blocking your number.
Yeah, but this is also the Cowboys. They are entitled. So what a low ball to them could probably be a very fair trade to the other 30 teams.
Sure. Like, not exactly. Not where I was going, but, you know, absolutely. I agree with that. But I would throw in, like, don't you want Nick Caserio to try to get the best price possible first?
Exactly.
And then – if the Cowboys, like, you don't know, like, they've made some weird trades. I mean, the Jonathan Mingo trade recently, the trading of fourth for Trey Lance, like, they've made some weird trades, trading away Amari Cooper for a fifth round pick.
Maybe that's why.
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Nick Caserio's like, you know, we might be able to get them.
Finesse these
like,
guys.
Yeah, we might be able. Yeah, exactly. Why not try to win the trade first? And if they say no, then you start to have the conversation. But, like, do you want Nick Caserio to just barge in like, okay, a future first and a fourth? Like, no, start with the lower end of it and then work your way up. That's just negotiation.
Again, it's what can I do for me, not you.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And that's why they're negotiations.
I don't understand why people were so upset about that with Caserio. Now, something I am upset about with Caserio, and this is nitpicking, this is petty, this really doesn't mean anything, but I don't know why Nick Caserio does things like we're about to hear. Like, last year or the year before, during the draft process, like, someone asked them about, like, windows. Like, you know, you always hear that. Like, what's the team's championship window? What's their window to compete? And he got on his high horse, got on his soapbox, like, I don't even know what windows are. What does that mean? Like, okay, even if you don't subscribe to the, like, defining the amount of time you compete in, you know what they mean by a window of time. Like, I don't know why Nick Caserio will push back on things like that. So that in mind, let's now hear two clips from Nick Caserio. First, Nick Caserio says, we don't draft for need.
When you look at what you did in free agency, do you feel like it puts you in a position where you don't have to, obviously no one wants to put the draft purely for need. You have it set up where you can be flexible as far as positions and BBP.
Yeah, well, we've never drafted for need around here. I mean, we're never going to. This whole concept of drafting for need, honest to God, I don't even know what it means. I mean, what does it mean? If someone could tell me that, I'd love to hear it, but we don't look at it that way. We need to keep drafting good people, good football players that are going to enhance the overall culture of our building, and we're not going to stray from that.
I don't know what draft for need means.
As someone that smart, he damn near, he knows what that fucking means.
Obviously, right? Like, and there was two lies in there. One, he says, we never draft for need. Lie. I'll just tell you right now, lie. And look, this is not a Nick Caserio only thing. I hear other GMs say this. I hear people say it in other sports. It's a lie every single time people say that. Now, every pick they take may not necessarily be their biggest need. That is true. They may sometimes strengthen a strength. They may sometimes take a player at like their third biggest need because the value isn't there for the needs ahead of it. But to say we never draft for need is the most asinine thing I've ever heard. So they
because you needed a quarterback and you drafted C.J. Stroud. You needed a defensive end and you traded
and
to get one. Yeah,
you gave a quarterback package to trade up for Will Anderson. Okay, let me ask you this, Cam. They made four picks yesterday, right? Two of them were wide receivers. Was that a need?
Yep.
They drafted for need. Their other pick of their first three picks was an offensive lineman. Did they need an offensive lineman?
Yes.
They drafted for need. Yeah. What are you talking about, Nick Caserio? Like, I mean, we could go through, and actually we partially did this exercise on the Killer Bees last week, like putting theory to, you know, to fact, trying to see, you know, where they drafted for need, where they drafted best player available. I don't know why Nick Caserio is pushing back on this. Like, the only thing I can think of to rationalize it is he wants to try to send the message to teams that we're a wild card. We could do anything. Like, he wants to throw people off the scent. Like, if people are trying to jump ahead of them.
Smokescreen.
Yeah. If the people are trying to jump ahead of them because they know, we need an offensive lineman. We know the Texans need an offensive lineman. So let's jump one spot in front of them. He's trying to throw people off that scent by trying to maintain, like, an air of unpredictability. But who's buying it? Like, I understand the game you're trying to play, but one, don't lie to us, and two, no one's really buying it.
And three, if you're not drafting for need, why did you call Dallas and try and move up from 25 to 12 to draft an offensive guard, which is a need? Like,
which is
you're not fooling anybody.
Not only just the need, their absolute biggest need, without a shadow of doubt, was interior offensive line. And they were talking about trading all the way up from 25 to 12 for it. Oh, but we don't draft for need. Shut the hell up, Nick. Hold on. Let me backtrack. Nick, first, you've done a great job. Second, shut the hell up. You draft for need.
Yeah.
Everyone drafts for need.
Unless you're one of the top two or, like, two teams, like Kansas City and Philly, you can get away with not drafting for need because you essentially have somewhat of a complete roster. But, like, this isn't basketball where you're literally drafting the best player there, and then you can move them around once they get on the team. In football, it's completely different. Well, you have to build for need.
Yeah, because I could hear the argument, you know, of never drafting for need in baseball because You draft a guy, he's on your major league team 4 years later.
Yeah.
Who knows, even if you're drafting a guy like the for the Astros, you know, let's say last year they draft a second baseman. Even though you have Jose Altuve now, where's Jose Altuve going to be in 4 years? Who knows, right? So I could see that in baseball because of the time, the period of time it takes for guys to get to the major leagues. To your point in basketball, I could see it there because, one, basketball is just a best player. Like, basketball is won by having the best overall player, right? It's, yeah. I think it's more reliant upon the individual than the other sports necessarily. And basketball has become so positionless that even if you draft a guy that are both technically small forwards, you can still make things work by playing one at the two, the other at the four, yeah. Whatever. You can make things work in kind of positionless sports, but football is not that. It's not positionless. It's like the most positionalized. Is positionalized a word? It's the most positionalized sport there is. And, yeah, I just...
Especially when there are certain positions that are so crucial to the success of the team, like the in the trenches, the quarterback, like those are all... Those are all needs.
Yeah, I mean,
whether it's your top need or your second need, it's still a need.
Yeah, if you were to power rank the importance of positions, I mean, to me, it's, you know, it's quarterback, those who protect the quarterback, those who
rush after the quarterback,
get after the quarterback, and those who try to intercept the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, those are the most, you know, important positions, and I guess the wide receiver would be in that group, and then you move, you know, further down the list. But I just don't, I don't understand why Nick Caserio is pushing back on it, and he's wrong. Like, so... Because of those two things, like, I got, I think, maybe more irked than I should have. Johnny, weigh in here. We haven't heard from you today. Am I right to be a little annoyed here from Nick Caserio saying he never drafts Reneed when he very clearly does?
I think you're probably, you know, nitpicking too much. I mean, I think he's done a great job as the general man. Now, if you had a lot of questionable draft picks and picks weren't hitting and people were frustrated and we wanted them out of here, then this is just another layer on top that you can throw on to complain and say, you know, even look at this. He's lying to us. He's doing – but he's done a great job. And
no,
I think
I know.
If he's doing it for a purpose, I mean, we obviously are speculating as to why, then who cares? Let him do what he's thing. By the way, quickly, before I let you go.
Okay.
Positionalized, not a word.
Not – oh, damn. See – I
you know what? Did you say that?
You know what? Hey,
I didn't catch it.
Johnny, during the break, call up Merriam-Webster. Let him know positionalize needs to be added to the board. Look, we're adding words to the dictionary all the time, right?
Oh, for sure.
Every single year, there's like a word of the year that didn't exist because it's now slang. Merriam-Webster, because I know they're listening. Shout out to Merriam. Shout out to Webster. I know they're listening. Positionalized needs to be in the dictionary for 2026. You with me, Cam?
I'm on board.
All right. See? We're making... Hey, Johnny, we're making history today. Did you know when you came into work today, you'd be making history?
We're making our own dictionary.
We're adding words to the dictionary. Positionalized. And Nick Caserio's lying to us. Again, great job, Nick. Stop lying to us. Don't insult our intelligence. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. He's done a great job.
Have some decorum.
I hope I've said that enough to drive that point home. He's done an outstanding job. But he's also lying to us and annoys me. All right. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk Rockets Warriors Game 3. Don't go anywhere. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.